This is really not a news conference. It's not a speech. It's not anything.
I didn't set out to be the gay candidate or the gay president, but also was open about who I am.
The musical vision of Michael Tilson Thomas on the Rainbow Minute.
The underlying theme of the system is set up against us. I think queer people can get that subtext while watching a really kooky, funny show.
Welcome to Life Detention with Women Behind Bars! Women Behind Bars!
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Tanzania denies AIDS healthcare in anti-queer crackdown. A gay conductor composes gay history, and drag and comic divas revive women behind bars. Those stories and more this week because you've tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm Laura Dickinson Turner.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 8th, 2020. Tanzania's treatment of LGBTQ people and its response to the AIDS pandemic are exposed in an alarming report issued by Human Rights Watch this week. The report, entitled If We Don't Get Services, We Will Die, charges the government of President John Magufuli with actions that threaten the country's queer citizens and its vital HIV/AIDS prevention and treatment efforts. According to Neela Ghoshal of Human Rights Watch, the Tanzanian authorities have orchestrated a systematic attack on the rights of LGBTI people, including their right to health. The report describes the routine discrimination that LGBTQ people face in government healthcare centers. It points to the forced anal examinations of men suspected of being gay, a medically discredited practice that human rights groups have called torture. Tanzania's health ministry has banned the sale of lubricants outside of government hospitals as a way to curb homosexuality. Several non-governmental drop-in centers offering HIV/AIDS testing and treatment have also been shut down for promoting homosexuality.
A veteran Tanzanian queer activist, identified by Agence France-Presse only as T, said that his country was a relative paradise before Magufuli's election in 2015. LGBTQ people had socialized in a variety of public places without police interference and even participated in government discussions of relevant subject matter. T says, now we have to hide ourselves. The Human Rights Watch report complained that manufactured threats around the so-called promotion of homosexuality have displaced best practices and evidence-based approaches in guiding HIV policy in Tanzania. Paul Makonda is the governor of Tanzania's most populous city and economic hub, Dar es Salaam. Makonda made headlines 2 years ago for announcing a special task force to hunt and drive out LGBTQ people to make Dar es Salaam a non-gay city. In a somewhat surprising move this week, the U.S. State Department banned Makonda and his immediate family members from entering the country due to his involvement in gross violations of human rights, though his particularly anti-queer actions were not specified.
Equality supporters in the Indian city of Mumbai found a way to celebrate LGBTQ pride despite a last-minute police ban of their scheduled annual parade. Authorities feared that ongoing street demonstrations against controversial, discriminatory legislation would spill over into the Pride March. The parade has been held without a problem in Mumbai since 2008. Thousands rallied instead at the city's government-designated protest area in Azad Maidan on February 1st. The Express News Service reported that there were more than 24 speakers and performers from diverse backgrounds. Queer Azadi Mumbai organizers issued a statement saying that, we could not cancel the event as we had delegates attending from all over India and the world. 29-year-old writer Shweta Vaidya told the news outlet, now people finally realize that the Pride March is a protest and not a party.
Tens of thousands of people braved an early rain and the potentially deadly coronavirus to celebrate Pride for the 25th time in the Australian city of Melbourne on February 2nd. Outspoken lesbian tennis great Martina Navratilova took a break from the Australian Open to lead the procession down Fitzroy Street. She was joined by Victoria State Premier Daniel Andrews, federal opposition leader Anthony Albanese, and more than 220 groups. the state government had already committed $15 million toward the construction of an LGBTIQ Pride Center on Fitzroy Street. When anticipated federal funding did not materialize, Victoria pledged another $10 million to the center. That announcement put an especially celebratory spring in the steps of the Pride marchers. Meanwhile, SBS On Demand announced this week that this year's Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Parade will be streamed live for viewers around the world for the first time. It's scheduled to kick off on Saturday, February 29th at 7:30 p.m. Sydney local time.
LGBTQ people celebrated legislative victories in three U.S. states this week. Both chambers of Virginia's legislature approved the Virginia Values Act on February 6th. It adds sexual orientation and gender identity to the state's civil rights laws banning bias in employment, housing, and public accommodations. Democrats won majorities in both the House and Senate in the historic Blue Wave midterms in 2018. Democratic Governor Ralph Northam has already expressed his support for the measure. It will make Virginia the first southern state to protect LGBTQ people under its civil rights laws covering race, gender, religion, and other characteristics. Danica Rome is the first transgender candidate to win election to the state legislature. She tweeted, "Change has come. Welcome to Virginia."
The chair of the Iowa House Judiciary Committee announced this week that a bill to remove protections against gender identity-based bias would not see the light of day. Republican Representative Stephen Holt said on February 5th that the bill proposed by nine members of his party to amend the state's Civil Rights Act would have had a lot of unintended consequences. It would have been the first time in history that a protected category was removed from a state civil rights law.
A bill to jail doctors who treat transgender teens is apparently also dead, at least in the Florida State House. It would punish doctors who prescribe hormone therapy or puberty blockers to transgender teens under 18 with up to 15 years in prison and fines of up to $10,000. Health Quality Subcommittee Chair Republican Colleen Burton announced, after hearing testimony from both sides, that her panel would take no further action on the bill. However, a companion bill is still pending in the state Senate. The Republican-controlled South Dakota State House approved a similar bill last week that's now being considered by the state Senate. Some 200 anti-queer bills have been introduced in dozens of U.S. states so far this year. They only have realistic chances of passage in legislatures controlled by Republicans.
Just in time for Black History Month, California Governor Gavin Newsom has posthumously pardoned gay civil rights trailblazer Bayard Rustin for a 1953 vagrancy conviction. In those days, vagrancy was one of the charges gay men could face if caught having consensual adult sex. Rustin was caught in the act with two men in a parked car. After spending 50 days in county jail, he was forced to register as a sex offender. He reportedly carried that shame for the rest of his illustrious life. Bayard Rustin was a member of Martin Luther King Jr.'s inner circle, one of the key architects of the 1963 March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, marked by King's I Have a Dream speech. Governor Newsom also announced an executive order this week to set up a way for other queer people jailed on antiquated morals charges to have their record cleared. Newsom said, "I thank those who advocated for Bayard Rustin's pardon, and I want to encourage others in similar situations to seek a pardon to right this egregious wrong." California's law criminalizing private homosexual acts by consenting adults was repealed in 1975. President Barack Obama posthumously awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Bayard Rustin in 2013.
Finally, former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg made history in more ways than one this week. He arguably won the first test of his Democratic presidential candidacy as an openly gay man in the Iowa caucuses. The minuscule difference in the final tally of the state's technologically flawed and convoluted system could also allow Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders to claim victory. But Buttigieg's strong showing in Iowa has prompted a sharp uptick in his popularity for the next battleground state, New Hampshire. That more traditional primary election is on February 11th. As the dust was still settling in Iowa, Buttigieg responded to host Stephen Colbert on the CBS TV program The Late Show with another bit of history.
You are the first LGBTQ person to win delegates in any presidential contest. What does that mean to you personally, and what do you think that means about America?
Well, what it means to me personally is that, you know, the very same thing that I thought might mean I would never get to serve in uniform or in office. Turns out to be, talk about God having a sense of humor, it turns out to be part of how I've had a chance to make a difference. I didn't set out to be the gay candidate or the gay president, but also was open about who I am. And here we are. And my hope more broadly is that, I know there's a lot of young people out there wondering if they fit, feeling like maybe they don't belong in their communities, maybe even questioning if they belong in their own families. And hopefully this is one significant bit of proof that they belong after all, and they belong in this country.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending February 8th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to NewsWrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Laura Dickinson Turner.
And I'm John Dyer V.
It was all bull.
Wow. Now, I would like to point out that for you people at home, we had to bleep that last word. Because CBS has higher standards than the President of the United States.
This just in, voters in Switzerland have passed a referendum outlawing discrimination based on sexual orientation. The measure had been approved by Parliament in 2018, but opponents forced the referendum. It passed by more than 60%. It prohibits anti-lesbian and gay hate speech and discrimination in public facilities. We'll have more details in next week's News Wrap.
It is fun, and we're having a blast out there, but this is a lot of work. This is a dangerous production.
Yeah.
We'll get to the ridiculous, but first, here's the sublime.
The musical vision of Michael Tilson Thomas, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. To hear stories about gay life and history, you can now turn to an unlikely source, classical music. It was part of a master plan by Michael Tilson Thomas, the music director for the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra, who knew to start with gay composers. In 2001, Thomas conducted the premiere of Gay Life, composed by David Del Tredici, pieces based on the poem by Allen Ginsberg and Paul Monet. The work explored the challenges for gay men living in America. A sampling of compositions by Thomas himself include We Two Boys Together Clinging for baritone and piano, and three poems by Walt Whitman for baritone and orchestra, both exploring intimacy between men. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, David Ryder.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out.
Women behind bars!
Women behind bars!
Just keep your wits around you, because women behind bars!
Women behind bars!
We'll toss their tits around you, and women behind bars!
Women behind bars!
Some cats will castrate you for sure!
There's a raucous revival of a 1975 piece of queer history and queer playwriting in Hollywood, and This Way Out's Brian DeShazer got a VIP backstage pass to visit the women behind bars.
Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer and fan of Tom Ion's 1975 cult comedy classic play, Women Behind Bars. And I'm going to take you backstage to meet the cast of Scott Thompson's new production, starring famous drag queens and actresses Meek Stoll and Tracy Lords, playing at the Mercado Montalban Theater just south of Hollywood and Vine in Hollywood. Tom Ion, a gay playwright born out of the experimental theater off-off-Broadway at the Cafe Chino, eventually went on to win the 1982 Tony Award for writing the smash hit Dreamgirls. In Women Behind Bars, he parodies the B-flicks of women in prison films from the 1950s and 60s, with a script co-producer and director Scott Thompson tells the audience is rated OTE, offensive to everyone. The original production in 1975 starred the gay icon drag actor Divine, which leads us to the connection with the cult film director John Waters. The new production stars Meek Stoll and Tracy Lords, who both come from Waters' troupe of camp actors that centered around Divine. And Women Behind Bars is the height of camp.
A shameful sorority of wanton women, ruled by a hateful house mother of pure evil. Starring Tracy Lords as Gloria, Eureka O'Hara as the matron, Ginger Minj as Ada, Chi-Chi Devane as Jojo, Miss Coco Peru as Louise, Mink Stole as Granny, Poppy Fields as Blanche, Susie Kennedy as Cherie, Tatiana Montiero as Guadalupe, Ingrid Cooper Smith as Mary, Wesley Woods as the man.
Mink Stoll, who plays Granny, invites me into her dressing room for a quick chat. What many people don't know about Mink is that she's a seasoned stage actress as well as in film.
I've done Tennessee Williams, I've done Shakespeare, I've done a lot of stage work. You know, but I did Tennessee Williams in New York, Provincetown, New Orleans a couple of years ago. I don't do it all the time, but I do it.
Well, you certainly hold court on stage.
Well, thank you. I love being on stage.
Right. Yeah. Right. So is there anything you can tell our little queer audience out there?
It gets better. It gets better. The world is a wonderful, big, beautiful place. And if you can just hang in there until you find the people that you're supposed to know and you're supposed to be with, you're going to be okay.
And like our title, This Way Out.
This Way Out, honey. Yeah, absolutely. No, you know, I was very lucky. I found my world when I was 19 years old. Sometimes it takes longer, but you will find it and you're going to be just fine.
In the next dressing room, I find Ginger Minj, Miss Coco Peru, and Poppy Fields.
Right. So here we are, Women Behind Bars backstage with the fabulous Ginger Minj,
Poppy Fields,
and Miss Coco Peru. In between shows, so I really appreciate your time. So tell me about Women Behind Bars. How fun is it out there on stage?
Well, I gotta say, like, it is fun, and we're having a blast out there, but this is a lot of work. This is a dangerous production,
yeah,
because we never leave the stage, and there's all 5'3" of me trying to climb up on 6-foot platforms with a busted shoulder and trying to stay. I mean, it's like a jungle out there, but it's also one of the most supportive environments I've ever been in.
Right, and it's one of the great pieces of queer literature, queer playwriting that we're sort of reviving from the 80s. Do you remember when it was originally
Miss Coco Peru.
Used?
I love that question was directed at me. But no, I don't. But I had seen two other productions before doing it. And what I've worked out in my head and why I feel like it's a great show to see now is the underlying theme of the system is set up against us. And, you know, I think queer people can get that subtext while watching a really kooky, funny show. And I do think, you know, at the end with Mink's last line, there's that moment of, oh, my God, that's what this is all about. So,
right, like, yeah. The 70s were hopeful. And actually, you have some of the most poignant lines in the play about your dreams being secondhand, right?
Yeah.
Again, Ginger Minj.
The one thing that...
You don't have to recite lines.
No, but the one thing that really drew me to Ada, which the director, when he first called me, when Scott called me, he said, you know, I don't really know if you're going to like this because there's not a ton of lines. But when I read through it and I really read those lines, I said, she's the heart of the play. She's the truth of the play. Mm-hmm. Everybody thinks she's crazy, but she's the only one that sees things for what they really are. And that was really important to me. So I wanted to approach it from a place of truth. Right. Because there is so much in there.
Right, and I think that's what Tommy and the playwright brings to it, and actually you play a version of Blanche DuBois.
Right.
Right, and the Tennessee Williams comes full on force in it. How is it with you with playing
Poppy Fields?
Well, it's a tremendous amount of fun since I'll probably never ever get to play Blanche DuBois. This is the closest thing I'll ever get to it. But Blanche is one of the few characters. Ginger completely summed up the character of Ada, who is kind of the Greek chorus of the play. She is the heart of the play. But Blanche, because of her character, gets a few poignant moments too, and I like that because she has levels. She's outrageous, but then she has these moments of clarity and bittersweet. She has those bittersweet moments, and I love playing that. And I'm Southern, so to play Blanche DuBois, any shade of Blanche DuBois, is exciting.
And Miss Coco Peru, what's your favorite line or what's your favorite moment?
Oh, I just love when Louise, my character, finally takes control of her life. And you know, that's the moment for me in the show. But I have so many little moments. And what was fun during the rehearsal process was, I think when I first read it, I thought, God, I don't have very much to do in the show. But then we all started mining these moments during the rehearsal. And I've watched Ginger sort of evolve Ada, like you said, into this sort of very sympathetic character, where when you read it on paper, you don't really get that.
No.
So that's been part of the process that's been wonderful. And then to hear the audience receive it, you think, okay, well, it was worth the work.
Right. And although that you all work in the world of high camp, this is legit theater, and y'all are just awesome.
Well, thank you.
Well, I was trained in theater.
I know. And
40 years ago.
All come full circle.
I'm Brian DeShazer. Coming up in part two, I look for more information about the play's author, Tom Ion, right after this important message from This Way Out. So much
cooler. There's nothing cooler than the world's only international LGBT radio magazine.
Unless it's thiswayout.org.
At thiswayout.org, you'll find program information,
related videos,
expanded features,
news wrap transcripts,
and CDs and downloadable material.
It might not be cooler than radio,
but there's much more This Way Out at thiswayout.org.
Step inside this troop. You've been found guilty, so you're taking a little trip to a correctional facility up the river, where killer women choose to live or die.
I'm Brian DeShazer for This Way Out, and welcome back to part two of our story about Women Behind Bars, the 1975 play that elevated camp from the experimental theater to its success off-Broadway in New York City. To find out more about the playwright and where Women Behind Bars fits in history of queer theater and beyond, I met up with Tom Ion's contemporary from the 1960s, celebrated gay playwright Robert Patrick.
We had only to put Tom's portrait in the window of the Cafe Chino and we'd fill up. We didn't even have to say what play of his it was. He reproduced his plays at the Chino and La Mama over and over, always rewritten, always campier, always better, and drew crowds no matter how often they had seen them. But Tom's problem, ambition-wise, was that he was writing what at the time were considered unthinkable for commercial theater, these campy, pseudo-gay plays. Tom was a bit ashamed of being gay and never wrote gay characters except for screaming, campy queens. By the time Tom went to off-Broadway, he had such a following and had begun to be noticed by the major papers as well as the Village Voice. I think they just slowly followed him ultimately to Broadway. But he was definitely one of the people who, though his work wasn't taken seriously because it's so funny and so campy, who had a very serious influence on the freedom and form of off-Broadway theater.
That was Robert Patrick. And now we go backstage to complete our dressing room tour between two exhausting shows to meet the show's stars, drag queen Eureka O'Hara, who plays the prison matron Pauline, and cell block leader Gloria, played to perfection by Tracy Lords. Here is Eureka O'Hara.
You are taking, filling in the shoes of Madame Divine.
Oh, my lanta.
And Ms. Lou Leonard, who I saw Lou Leonard at the Roxy all those years ago.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I'm witnessing you revive a character.
Wow.
And killing it every night.
Thank you.
So little David from Johnson City, Tennessee. Tell me, did you ever dream that you would be filling in the shoes of one of the greatest drags in history?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a dream, right? I mean, I thought about it. I love Divine. You know, Female Trouble is my favorite movie ever, just because, like, her line before she's about to get electrocuted, you know, she's like, Dawn, don't you understand? This isn't a joke. It's not a show. You're about to be dead. You're going to get killed. And she's like, I don't care, darling. When are you all going to understand? My entire life is a show. And I'm like, same! Same. So I've always felt like I was way too theatrical for everything else around me. So it's just like what I love to do. And I think that's one thing that even like with I Am Divine, the documentary that you kind of learn about Glenn, who plays Divine, is like normally Glenn was like kind of a quiet, chill person, it seemed like. And this character was like all those emotions and that persona that was deep down or inside and was able to like kind of get that anger and frustration with society out. I mean, even John Waters interviewed about that, you know. And I think that's what we do with drag. So then to get to do this kind of character too, it's like we all get pissed off and angry and like want to be the mean ass, like angry person, but we can't. So to get to play the character is even cooler. A villain is like the most fun to play ever. And what other like role to play besides a villain behind Divine? You know, I can't come out as Pink Flamingos, but I can come out as Women Behind Bars, you know, and play the matron. So it's just a good homage, you know, respectful love to her. And what she did without trying to copy her. That's kind of the goal.
And you hit it right on the nail. Hit nail on the head.
Nail on the head. Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much, my dear.
So here's my card.
Welcome to Life Detention with Women Behind Bars.
And finally, the woman who brought everyone to their feet as the star ringleader of the women in prison cell, Gloria, played by the amazing Tracy Lords. We only had a minute as the stage manager was about to call places for the next show.
I've had such a ball doing Women Behind Bars. I mean, the cast is incredible. Eureka, I mean, just as a nemesis, it's so amazing. We've had, like, just, it's been such a wild ride. It's been crazy.
All right, so say hello to all our queer people all over the world that are listening to This Way Out in the corners of little tiny towns and radio stations.
Hi, this is Tracy Lords. Hello, all you beautiful queer people. Stay weird and fabulous.
Break legs.
Thank you.
Love you.
Love you too.
Bye.
Welcome to Supermax, where cool, fun, fabulous, bored, and Strider acts. Where Double D will meet a mystery.
It's fun to see Tom's campy, unthinkable, drag queeny parody satire at the Ricardo Montalban, because some years ago when it was the Huntington Hartford. That's where I first hit the big stages in L.A. with Kennedy's Children.
It was a privilege to bring you a bit of queer theater and meet the actors and actresses that have revived it to rave reviews and standing ovations. Thanks to Scott Thompson and Matthew Herman. I'm Brian DeShazer, and as Ming Stoll says,
this way out, honey.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Laura Dickinson Turner and John Dyer V, produced by Brian DeShazer, from David Ryder, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and from Brian DeShazer. Women Behind Bars was composed by Fred Barton and featured vocals by Nikenje. You can hear Brian's extended interview with legendary gay playwright Robert Patrick at thiswayout.org. His email is brian@thiswayout.org. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Together with all of our listener donors, they make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 4NSA Noosa Head, Queensland, KTALLP Las Cruces, New Mexico, WXIR Rochester, New York, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Now y'all stay tuned.